Run! Go! Get to the jibber jabber!
Ladies and gentlemen, today marks the return of the deep dive. It's been a while since we've done a deep dive, but it's a new year. It's not new us, but it's a new deep dive, J-Mac. Are you excited about the return of the deep dive?
I am. It's been a long time since we've done a deep dive, and they're always good fun to do. You feel like a kind of professional movie critic or something. You're sitting down to watch a film in your house, but you've got a wee notepad out and stuff. And that's the exact one. It's right here. By the way, if you are interested in doing that sort of stuff, this is a great wee journal. I got it off Amazon for both of us probably just over a year ago. They've served us well. So, movie journal, and they are printed by. It's from signaturekisses.co.uk. There you go.
Check it out.
They sell through Amazon, I believe.
J-Mac gifted me one last year, and I was like, "Fucking yes, man!" and that's basically what we were doing as our deep dive. We plan to do deep dive face to face in J-Mac's new cave with the full 4K setup and stuff, and all the interchanging cameras and amazing, outstanding audio and all that cool stuff. That will happen. Just as you all are very much aware, 2020 has been a shitter of a year for the big old COVID. So as soon as we're able to, we will be bringing that to you. But right now, I thought, you know, new year, what better way to start the new year than to return the deep dive? And as you've probably seen from that intro, it was totally all J-Mac that wanted to watch Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay, my reasoning behind that was, I was like, let's try and find, you get loads of films that are set at different times of the year, like Christmas and Halloween, Easter, in fact, Easter's pushing it. But I was like, I can't think of films that are set in New Year, except the film New Year. Remember that crappy ensemble rom-com?
I avoided it, honestly,
it was one of the ones where I'm like, I'm not doing that for this. So I
decided, Bon Jovi's even in it, mate.
mate, he's a great actor. But I thought, right, I'm going to do a bit of research and find some movies that are set around that time. And Sleepless in Seattle popped up. Now, having watched it, I know that New Year is mentioned like once in the film. But that was the deciding factor on doing that. And I remember seeing it once quite a while ago and thinking, you know what, I actually remember it being quite a decent film. So,
and it does actually feel like a New Year kind of movie. It has the feel.
Aye, new year, new me, new partner, maybe sort of thing.
My old partner's deed.
Aye, there is that. There's a lot to delve into here. Like, so it's everybody's mum's favourite. So let's get stuck in about the old.
So I'm going to give you just a wee bit of a rundown on what's what with that. So we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what the movie's about. So Meg Ryan, you've got Rita Wilson, Rosie O'Donnell. And we've got Tom Hanks are the kind of the main cast, and Casper's dad is in it also.
Yeah, Bill Pullman. I love Bill Pullman, man.
Bill Pullman's fucking class.
I've never seen him in anything that I didn't like him in. I've seen him in some shite movies, but he's always likable.
He kind of just disappeared. He's not really a thing now, is he?
He was in Independence Day too. And Sinner on Netflix.
Right, yeah.
He was in that show with Jessica Biel as well. A damn fine actor.
Yeah.
He is.
So Nora Ephron, not Nora Ephron, had written and directed this movie. And Rosie O'Donnell herself, actually.
Just Rosie O'Donnell.
Okay. Well, how can you hate fucking Barney's wife? How can you hate Barney's wife?
I'm not a huge Rosie O'Donnell fan, but we'll speak about that.
Do you know what? To be honest, I only know her as Barney's wife in The Simpsons, and The Flintstones, and now from this. Why do people dislike Rosie O'Donnell?
I don't know. For me, I just don't find her very appealing in any way. I don't know what it is. I can't pinpoint it. But again, we can we can delve into that a wee bit once we get into that bit of the film.
So they're in this movie, which is weird that Tom Hanks's real life wife plays his sister in it. That must have been a fun one at a fun day off, I say, right?
A bit incestuous, is it not? It's a bit of a weird setup. But hey, it's not the first time it's been done.
They made a sequel called Sleeping in Seattle, where things take a turn between Tom and Rita.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't. It would have been more interesting than Sleepless in Seattle. Fuck.
I think we've got Kev's verdict already.
So basically the premise of the movie is what guy's wife dies and his son doesn't like to see his dad all sad all the time, so calls into a radio station where a nosy little bitch kind of forces Tom Hanks onto the telephone, and she's like, tell me all about it, tells him all about it, and then before you know it, he has an influx of letters of women that love to meet him because he spoke so nicely of his wife, ex-wife, well, grey area. and then for some reason you've got Meg Ryan, who's apparently all right, she's going to get married to Casper's dad, right? Everything seems to be fine. She's all happy. She kind of projects that she's got a happy life. And then through watching a movie on the TV, her and, Rosie O'Donnell, that's the fucking problem.
A friend that's a bad influence, I know nothing about that sort of thing.
No, I do.
I mean, you've got, the opening scene is the funeral, right? So we never get to meet his wife, right? So she's a dead character. Marley was dead to begin with. She's dead right at the beginning, right? So we don't have any kind of connection between us and her. It's straight to Tom Hanks and his son. That opening scene
visually was nice.
Aye, it was. And then they get to the wake, which is in the house, and it's just a bunch of women telling them how to microwave meals. So it goes to show the time this film was made, where it was still essentially a one working parent situation, you know, where it would be the man went to work and the women did all the cooking. Now he's
we could probably be offended by that. I'm offended. You assume a guy doesn't know how to cook.
I'd give everything for life to be like that again. You know what I mean? Or even if it was my wife that did work the working and I was the house husband, absolutely fine with that.
Is that not your setup already?
I mean, I think the quality of life has dipped since both parents had to work full time. There's no doubt about it. But it's our own fault because we want everything now. We won't save up for anything. We just want it now. So everybody works these silly jobs to buy shit that we don't need to impress people we don't know. But it's a bit Fight Club. Anyway, fuck that. Right. So it was a kind of sign of the times that it was made. And like I said, we've got Meg Ryan shows up. 90s sweetheart Meg Ryan was.
I even took notes on that very point.
Yeah, she's a beautiful, beautiful woman, right? There's no doubt about it. And Tom Hanks. Do you know, I think Tom Hanks looks like Steven Crowder in that film?
He needs to sort his hair out, I think.
It was something that stood out to me. I was like, he looks like the young Tom Hanks looks like Steven Crowder. If anybody doesn't know who Steven Crowder is, he is either there or there, and you can judge. All right. There seems to be a decent chemistry between Hanks and Ross Malinger, who is the young actor that plays his son Jonah in the film. Seems to be a decent chemistry between them, but yeah, it kind of falls apart quite quickly for me. That whole radio thing, the idea of a show like that boils my fucking bollocks. It really does. It's such an intrusive way in making people's strife entertainment, you know? I mean, it's kind of like what Jeremy Kyle does, but Jeremy Kyle, sorry, what he did before he got ripped off the air for somebody killing themselves. What that show is basically objectifying arseholes and basically making money off the arseholes. Now, I don't mind it with Jeremy Kyle because these people deserve it because they're fucking absolute tollies for want of a better word. But this is different. This is like, I mean, kind of ripping into the mind of a guy that's just lost his wife and kind of sensationalizing it for a whole country. Nah, mm. no thanks. Mm. And I think his wee boy was a bit of a cunt for that, to be honest.
Aye, for sure, for sure.
Aye.
Who, by the way, does his son even grieve?
Wait, does he even grieve?
I know.
How much time passes in this film before he starts dating that fucking giggle monster?
Is it not like a year and a half?
I can't work it out. Hmm. Does he even mention it?
I think it's
a year and a half. Is there any indicator as to how much time's passed? To me, it just seems really quick to go from just lost my wife to, yep, I'm ready for bumping again. You know? And I didn't get any...
Again, very sexist towards the male. Kenny Cook just wants to shag everything. Right?
So basically this show makes him go viral 1990s style, right? And he ends up getting all these kind of love letters for these women that want to marry him, basically. It's like, well, you've not seen this guy.
I know, that's another thing.
And to say that you can't base a relationship on looks is something to do with it. You know what I mean? If it didn't, then everybody would just pick partners out of a fucking audio fucking catalogue. Mm-hmm. Oh, he sounds nice. He'll do. That's not how life works. There has to be some kind of physical attraction between people for a relationship to actually work. And anybody that tries to say otherwise, you're talking pish.
Mm-hmm. Hell so, yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't it really not a big issue when he meets Meg Ryan? Because even he stops in awe when she gets off the plane. One thing I took notes on was the fact that Meg Ryan had a really strong presence in the movie. And she is kind of the ideal woman any guy would want to marry. She's so sweet. She's nice. She speaks nice. She's enthusiastic about stuff that that maybe not every woman is enthusiastic about.
But is she sweet, though? Is she nice?
Well, because she seemed it to me.
Well, she seems it on the surface, right? But let's break this down a wee bit.
I know exactly where we're going, and I agree. but we'll go there.
What you were just saying about her being like really enthusiastic about stuff, I found that her performance was actually a bit too theatrical a lot of the time. Like, it was like she was on stage as opposed to being filmed. You know, it was very blah, blah, arms all over the place. And I know some people are quite animated, but with her, I felt it was a bit forced and a bit unneeded. But that's just me. But the fact that, I mean, the character of Walter, who's her fiancé, right?
Casper's dad.
Actually Casper's girlfriend's dad, or the lassie that Casper fancies dad. I thought I'd better clear that one up quite early.
What?
He's Kat's dad.
Oh, aye, that's right, Kat's dad.
But you can say he's the dad in Casper.
Aye, sorry. You know what? Why did I let that one go? Casper is like one of my all-time favourites.
Don't go to Google and type in dad in Casper, you get a very fucking different thing. I found her performance a bit weird. But aye, so the character of Walter was fucking likable. He was a nice guy. He was a bit boring, like polishing his speakers before going to sleep and stuff like that. But normally with a film like this, you're supposed to not like the current boyfriend or fiancé. Mm. He's always kind of portrayed as a bit of a douche, which I suppose is kind of a bit brave on the filmmaker's part to try something different. But for me, it fell flat on its arse. Mm. I wanted to not like him, but I did. At not one point during this whole film did I actually want those two to get together.
Do you know what's funny? See the part where he's at the dinner table and he's like, yeah, I've got allergies to this. I can pretty much, if I eat a nut, my face will swell and I'll die. I thought to myself, that's how Meg Ryan will get with Tom Hanks, because she's not going to leave him. He's sound. He's going to blow up like a fish and die.
That would have been, at least they'd have had something in common.
right. That's where I thought it was going.
But I liked him. I didn't think that he deserved to have her go behind his back and try and find some other guy that she'd heard on the radio. I just found it all a bit fucking silly, to be honest.
That did get a bit.
She came across as a bit of a bitch.
I would agree with that. But if you take that out of the equation, she would be someone that you'd want to get with.
Oh, she's amazing otherwise. But I'm going to address something now. The bit of the film that we're at is essentially, we've kind of met Walter, right? Mm-hmm. We know who he is, and the radio calls happen. I haven't laughed yet.
No,
this
mate.
Is supposed to be a romantic comedy.
See where they say it was comedy, I was like, what the fuck's the funny bits? I didn't laugh once.
I think I laughed once, and I think it was when Tom Hanks and the wee boy were having a conversation about sex, and the wee boy said, that's what sex is. It's like we just women scratch men's backs and scream. I thought that was funny, but yeah, that was probably the only time I laughed during the whole film. And I'm not trying to deliberately shit on this film. I remember enjoying it, but there was just something just didn't click.
I found it boring as fuck. I actually was so bored. I watched it and my wife was kind of there watching it too, right? And usually she greets at all that shite.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Black hat.
I'd have one moment where I teared up a wee bit, but I'll tell you about that when we actually get to that point in the film.
Uh-huh.
So we get introduced to what she does for a living. So she's obviously some kind of reporter or whatever. And Rosie O'Donnell is our friend that she works with. Rosie O'Donnell, like I said, I'm not a big fan. I don't think she's a good actress. I don't think she's a good comedian. I find her kind of hard to look at.
She's Betty for the Flintstones.
Aye, but even that film was shite. And you can debate that with me all you want. But the Flintstones was rubbish. It wasn't as bad as the second one, but it is actually pants.
Disagreeing with you. Disagreeing with you.
Rosie O'Donnell's been replaced now. This was the 90s. The new Rosie O'Donnell is Alex Borstein.
Aye.
You didn't think I was going to say that, did you?
No.
It's Alex Borstein for me who plays Lois in Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever seen her in film or on TV, she kind of looks a bit like Rosie O'Donnell, and she's always kind of brash, and she's the kind of bad influence most of the time. It's that kind of character. She's the new Rosie O'Donnell for me. But this was the 90s, so we still had Rosie. It's like she's dead. she's not dead. She's just crap.
Serious.
And then we had that attempt at a joke where she was like, when somebody's a widow, they're a widow and they get widowed. But when somebody's a widower, they don't get widowered. And I was like, that's not funny. But it was like it was supposed to be a big laugh. I'm like, this is terrible. It's not funny. And then here's another thing. This one actually made me chuckle a wee bit. This is the early 90s. Now, she was talking about wanting to meet this guy. And Rosie O'Donnell's like, hey, you don't know who this guy is. He could be a junkie or a flasher or a transvestite. I was like, couldn't he get away with that now, could you? Lumping in a transvestite with junkies and flashers.
Transvestite.
Oh, that's a risky move. Well done, 90s.
I found it just to be quite... Again, I was waiting on something. And I found myself waiting on that something the whole fucking movie. I thought, well, what is the point in this?
Yeah. What do you think of the music in the movie?
It's nothing stands out.
See, for me, there was too much. There was too much music. There was too many songs just randomly placed throughout the film. There wasn't much in the way of score, like just kind of normal atmospheric score that you get for movies. It was just song after song. And it was all kind of 50s swing style stuff or romantic.
Yeah, for sure. Do you know what I did like about it, though?
So noticeable.
Was the fact that it felt like it was Christmas. The atmosphere, the weather, the light, and everything was kind of dark and dull. And it just kind of felt like the end of the year.
Seattle, isn't
it? exactly. I mean, apparently it rains there.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. It rains a lot. Aye.
So I found that.
It was Seattle where the. Where the crazy protesters kind of stole 6 blocks of the city quite recently. You know about this?
No,
they called it Chaz. It was on this autonomous zone. They decided it was not part of the United States.
I heard about that.
That was in Seattle. So fucking it must be a right fucking dull place for you to think that's a good idea. Anyway, if you're from Seattle, let us know what it's like.
jibberjabberpodcast.com.
And is Tom Hanks phoning in his performance as well?
I found him to be very dull and just sit back.
I know he's a fantastic actor, and it's not even that he is now and he wasn't then. Mm-hmm. He'd already won his Oscar for Philadelphia by that time, I think. I think. Or it might have been the same year. But he's clearly a great actor, but to me it just looked like he was there for a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I didn't really get into his character as Sam at all.
I mean, I can visually show you my react. Like here's me watching Sleepless in Seattle.
Is that why you said at the beginning that I'll have more to say about it than you? Because you were sleeping.
Mate, I fell asleep a few times through it. Not like enough to miss a lot.
Like, but you know that way in Seattle, mate, like sleeping in Bathgate.
Exactly, mate. I'm not even joking. I was waiting for it to get to something. I felt like I was waiting a lot when I was watching it. And I thought, you know, see, for a movie that has, I mean, when you say Sleepless in Seattle to me before, I just rewatched it there. You always kind of picture that scene where they meet on the tower, right?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, well, there must be a great movie. Or, no, no, really. It's very anticlimactic. It's not, I wasn't invested or nothing.
There's so much to delve into before we even talk about the ending. Honestly, man. See the bit where Tom Hanks decides he's going to kind of jump into the water, right? He's going to kind of go on a date with this woman. It wasn't because he particularly fancied her. It's just somebody that he knew, you know, and he knew that she was single. So he phones her to ask her out on a date. If I made that phone call and she reacted the way that she did, I wouldn't have went on the date. Fucking nutter, man.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I wonder if you want to go out for a drink. And then you just see him going, dinner? It's like, what, that's the more serious one. It's like, oh, she's jumping straight to dinner. At that point, I'd maybe still be on board. And then she makes the plan. I'm like, no. I phoned you. I'm making the plan. Nah. Mm-hmm. You know what? Wrong number.
Wrong number. God, wrong number.
And the thing is, even when she came into it, I think, was it Victoria was her name? I think I might have written it down wrong. But when she comes into it and she's got that annoying laugh and you're like, right, okay, we're supposed to hate this woman. But she's not a bad person. The wee boy's being a total dick to her just because he knows about Annie,
mm-hmm.
who's in Baltimore on the other side of the country. So the wee boy decides that he wants her to be his new mum. Never met her, you know?
Again, that's a bit weird, eh?
As a result, he's just been a dick to her. And then, obviously, Sam and Jonah have an argument about that and blah, 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 blah. And none of this film is realistic. And I couldn't relate to any of it. Like I said, there was one bit where I kind of felt like I did tear up a wee bit, and it was when they were having the conversation, and the wee boy asks his dad, like, do you believe in heaven? And then he says that he was starting to forget his mum. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck, that's tough. That really is. Yeah. And I teared up a bit. And then it was today when I was thinking about it again, I was like, that's fucking stupid. He wouldn't he be forgetting her? She died 3.5 minutes ago.
I know.
I know you're going to say, oh, the film takes place over a longer time. Does it? I didn't see anything that told me that. Mm. To me, it just seemed like, wife died, I need my hole. I want them all. That's what it seemed like to me.
That's the description right there. What's Sleepless in Seattle about? Wife died, I need my hole. Wee dick of a kid.
So that one part of the film where I actually felt a bit of a connection or a bit of emotion to it just got destroyed today when I thought about it again. I was like, nah, even that was stupid.
Aye.
They tried and nearly got me. But also, was stalking cool in the 90s?
No, right?
I don't remember that.
She stalks the shit out of him after what? Hearing his voice on the radio.
Aye.
She never even seen him.
And then she shows up and she nearly gets hit by the truck because they're just kind of staring at each other and they say hello to each other. It's almost like he knows who she is, but he's no sure. And like, if I thought that was her, I'd be like, this bitch is fucking nuts.
Like, I'm here with my kid and so he was with his sister.
Aye.
And she's kind of watching on and he's like fucking...
I was like, this is weird. It's like advocating stalking. Also advocating dangerous driving. She's reading a map in front of her when she's driving. Like, in front of her. I mean, Kev, you don't drive, right? But I'm sure you know that the best thing to do when you're driving is look at the fucking windscreen.
Pretty much.
Aye. It's the 90s. The 90s is liberal with dangerous driving and drink driving.
See, mate, I know.
Drink, not necessarily in this film, but in films in general, folk go out and get absolutely slaughtered and just drive home and nothing's ever mentioned about it.
Or they're drinking while they're driving in their convertible.
There are some states where it is legal to drink within your comfort when driving. Like, I think in Texas, you're allowed to drink beer when you're driving. Maybe it's just an American thing. These people are nuts.
Fucked up. Mental.
And I don't know if you noticed this, mate. Did you spot the Game Boy?
Where was that?
It was when, what's his name? The wee boy, Jonah. Jonah and his wee girlfriend were somehow booking a flight online for him to go to New York.
Unbelievable.
To meet her. It was 1993. I did not know you could book flights online. I had no idea.
Yeah. Especially with the ID.
Don't go there, man. I think we actually need to accept the fact that this film makes no fucking sense. Yeah. But the Game Boy popped up. I thought you'd have noticed that. I'm disappointed.
I think I might have been snoozing at that point.
Snoozing in Seattle. Oh, well, I'll move on for that quite quickly. I was hoping that you'd got excited there.
Yeah, I would have if I'd seen it, but... Couldn't hold my attention, man.
When Sam has the argument with Jonah about, listen, I'm dating Victoria, this woman lives on the other side of the country, stop trying to interfere in my life. It's like, she could be anybody. She could be mental. I'm totally with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, going back to this thing where I do not want these two to get together. There seems no good reason for it other than the fact that her man was a wee bit boring.
I know, right?
Do you know, and the new girlfriend, she wasn't a horrible person. It wasn't like she was going to be the wicked stepmother. There was nothing wrong with her except her hideous laugh.
Yeah.
You know, but you can see past that eventually, you know? Or you can wear earplugs. I don't know.
But
also, I like the babysitter character. Do you know why? She's the only one that spent that whole film just looking totally gormless that was supposed to be.
Of course.
She just sat there like... So shout out to, I think her name was Clarice. Yep. She's the only character I liked, and she spoke once. Oh, no, I liked Walter as well. I did.
Yeah, Kat's dad and Casper.
I mean, Kev's getting the tire on.
Just because I'm talking about Sleepless in Seattle, mate. It's fucking... I just found nothing interesting about it at all.
I think we might need just release this episode as a comedy sideline, and we'll actually do a proper deep dive on something that we both enjoyed.
Mate, have we done a deep dive where we both didn't enjoy what we watched?
I don't think so. No, Taxi Driver. But that was... That was
different reasons.
A different thing. Aye.
Yeah.
But anyway, it comes to that inevitable moment where she has to break up with Walter. And you're like, oh, fuck, man, Waller, poor bastard. He's done literally nothing wrong. And she's breaking up with him. And then she says this to him, and I could have smashed my screen, which is a wall. I could have smashed my wall when she said it to him. She said, I don't deserve you, Waller. I was like, oh, you fucking bitch. It's like you don't deserve any more than him. You know what I mean? You probably deserve less. You've treated them like shit because he likes to polish his speakers.
I was like,
that does not fly. I wanted him at that moment, at least, if they'd written in that he turned into an arsehole, you could go, all right, that was the real Walter. This nice guy was just an act. But he was just like, all right, cool. It was nice shagging you for a while.
And then it's like, oh, sorry, I've got to go. There's my man.
I was raging. I had the rage. I was like, this film makes no fucking sense. All right. I hope my mum doesn't listen to this. I know she loves that film.
What do you know what you should do? Ask her why.
I know what she'd say. She'd say, it's a nice wee film. And I'd need to say, it makes no sense, mum.
It's a nice wee film.
No sense. My mum says that about any film that's actually shite, but kind of it'll pacify for an hour and a half. So anyway, as I was saying, obviously Jonah's managed to get on a flight somehow, unquestioned. She did say that she was going to put in the details that he looked really young for his age, but they shouldn't question him about it because he's sensitive about it. That's how they kind of got away with having a kid travel thousands of miles by himself. Aye, okay then. Nay bother. Although it was pre-9/11, I know that airport and airline security and procedures were a lot more lax back then, but fuck me. Mm. That's just crazy babies. And then he gets to the Empire State Building and Annie's not there because she hasn't quite broken up with Waller yet and stuff. But then Sam finds him at the top of the building after panicking that he was missing. Obviously, he had that scene. And then he finds him at the top of the building. He just gives him a cuddle. And I was like, nah. If you lose your kid in the supermarket for 5 minutes, he's no seeing tomorrow when you find them. You know what I mean? It was, again, just unrealistic. It was just that Hollywood cuddle. It's like, oh, come on, man. You'd be raging. You'd not need threatening him with getting grounded or something if he ever does anything like that again. Mm. But it was just such an amicable meet-up again. I don't know. Maybe it's different if your son goes properly missing, like thousands of miles, and when you see him, it's just all love that comes out, maybe. But to me, it just, it didn't fly. Didn't even get a smacked arse. So, again, and I still didn't want them to get together. So I almost wanted the lifts to pass each other by. You know what I mean? Even when they did meet, it was all cutesy. And to quote Jack Jarvis, birthday cared, pish. Even the bit with the security guard, when they've met, you just see the lift opening in the background because it should be closed already, but he's lit her up, blah, blah, blah. The lift opens, so you just see the security guy standing there out of focus, and you just see him kind of looking at his watch.
Aye.
It's like, did they run out of money? Could they pay this guy to shout one line? You know what I mean? Oh, well, shut. I've got my dinner waiting. Security guard wouldn't come and give a subtle hint like,
I don't even think they saw that as well, did they? Because he was behind them.
No, that was for our benefit. And then, also, when they meet, right, do you honestly think that Meg Ryan would look at Tom Hanks and go, oh, he's getting it, like...
Knowing that movie.
It didn't match for me, man. They didn't have chemistry on screen either for the brief time that they were on.
No.
Nothing. Disney pish. Right, now, I was saying about the kind of... the boyfriend or the fiance not being a total dick, and that was a new move. The whole film kind of goes against the standard rom-com formula, which is they should meet, they fall in love, they fall out, they fall in love again. That's the standard for how rom-coms are made. And they didn't do that. They're trying to do something new. Again, brave move, but there's a reason these films are done like that, and it's because it works.
Uh-huh.
And when you mess about with that formula too much with a rom-com, you lose it. And to me, it's just more of a boring Hallmark-style drama. And it was not for me, even with all that star power.
Yeah.
Just not for me.
I kind of thought we'd come on this and you'd be like, oh, I loved it. It was absolutely sublime. And I'd be like, fucking shut up, man. It was fish.
What made you think I would love it?
I don't know. You can, and I think Todd had mentioned this to me before. You and I, as much as we've got a lot of really in common movies that we both love, right, you tend to go for more thought-provoking, dialogue-driven movies, as I'm more into the whole, he's fucking cut his head off and put it on a spike and battered him with, right?
Yeah.
And I think something like that may have been right up your street, and I knew it wasn't up mine. But it's nice to know that it wasn't up your street also.
No, do you know, actually, I had a mate of mine, Big Dave. Mm. I got him to watch Pulp Fiction the other week for the first time. And he said it was pish. He said there was too much talking in it. And I was like, this is exactly what you're talking about, though. I'm into things that are dialogue-driven and well-acted and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's like you said, I think he just wants to see folk getting blown away.
Yeah. There's enough of everything in Pulp Fiction. Do you know?
If you actually sit and watch it now, there isn't actually a lot in the way of action. You know? There's the occasional wee bit of violence, like the head blown up in the car and stuff like that. When the violence happens, it's violent, but it actually is really infrequent, really infrequent. It is extremely dialogue heavy and story driven. And another thing he said is that he was disappointed that it didn't all come together at the end. Some of it does, but it's really just between Jules and Vincent and Honey Bunny and English guy, whatever his fucking name is, Pumpkin.
Yeah.
So he was disappointed that didn't all kind of come together with every character coming into that diner.
Mate, all I wanted to know while watching Pulp Fiction was, did Tony Rocky Horror get thrown off a fucking building for giving Mia Wallace a foot massage?
I don't know. Anyway,
you don't mean to tell me this motherfucker got to throw his ass off a fucking building for giving a foot massage? Nobody puts his hands on Mrs. Wallace unless that man is Mr. Wallace. See, I think if the dialogue's fucking banging, if it's right, then it makes a movie just that much better.
But again, this film, it should have been quite dialogue driven, but I found the dialogue just unrealistic. And it wasn't like sitcom unrealistic where every second line is trying to be a joke. You know, like when you're watching like Big Bang Theory or something, and every line that everybody says is an attempt at a joke. And that does my head in, and it's one of the reasons I can't watch that fucking show. But even the attempts they had at humour in this, just 95% of it just did not land. Occasionally it would make me smirk, and once it made me go like this. That's not a comedy.
I totally agree. I found myself, whilst I was taking the notes, I found myself going, you know, I really can't go into this that much because it's fucking boring.
And you fell asleep.
right. So I mean, I did my research on it. You know, it won 4 awards. One of the awards was best family comedy.
I was family like, comedy. I could no way get my kid to sit and watch that with me. Mate, not you a couldn't fucking chance.
You got me to watch it, and that was only for his deep dive, and I regret watching it.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
Hate best. It. I dislike
it. Was that a Golden Globe or something?
No. I think it was.
It was either Golden Globe, or it might be like some of the awards that IMDb lists. You're like, what the fuck is that? It's like, oh, won the Israeli high school football award for fucking shittest actor. Did it?
Nah, it done all right. Do you know it financially? It was a huge success financially.
People were stupid in 1993.
Yeah.
I'm convinced of that. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced of that. Is that when Stop or My Mum Will Shoot came out as well?
When what? Oh,
that was 91. Stop or My Mum Will Shoot. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think I have.
Oh, man. It's one of Stallone's worst. it's absolutely dreadful. And the only reason he did it is because his agent wanted him to do it for the money so his agent could get paid. So his agent told him that Schwarzenegger was going to do it if he said no. He was coerced into doing a fucking terrible film about a wee old lady with a fucking magnum.
That's hilarious.
So, if we were going to rate this one out of 5, I'll go first because I know what you're going to do. I know what you're going to say. I'm going to give it 1.5 stars. And the 1.5 stars is for purely for the performance of the young boy. Because he was actually quite a likable wee guy, even though he was a wee dick. He was like, he played that character well. So I'll give it 1.5 stars. The rest of that film can get flushed in the toilet, as far as I'm concerned.
For me, I actually gave it 2 stars, which is why I'm shocked. The reason I gave it 2 is one, because it made me feel like I was watching something Christmassy, something with the right setting, the right feeling. It made me feel like it was the end of the year. So to feel like that while watching something, that's a positive. And the second was purely just because Meg Ryan was in it.
She is lovely. There's no doubt about that. Actually, one more thing I wanted to mention is they keep bringing up that fucking Cary Grant film all the way through this film. That was annoying as well. It's like, right, we get it. She likes this film. Everybody she meets... She'll say something, they'll go, oh, that's for that film. Life isn't like that, man.
No.
It was stupid. And again, it got annoying. The amount of times that movie's brought up, the movie that they were talking about was An Affair to Remember, which is about two people that meet on a cruise ship, but they're both engaged, but they decide to try and get together anyway. Manky bastards. So, one more point on it. I wouldn't want to go out with Sam if I was a woman. Because he didn't get divorced. You know, I mean, his wife died. if she didn't die, they'd still be married. He was happy. I would hate to be trying to be the person that's kind of going to try and get onto that pedestal that he had his, that he kind of held his wife on.
So, I don't know. I think,
especially if I only heard him on the radio.
I think, you know, if you're going to marry, if I was to marry someone tomorrow that, say I was single and I married someone tomorrow that had a husband that died, I'd like to think that I wouldn't have to take his place, but I could be, I'd have my own lane. You know?
I'd be not only that, you've also got the kid to contend with.
Well, there's nothing wrong. I mean, no matter what, a child would never look at you as a dad anyway. So again, your own lane. You know what I mean?
It's one of the ones where I think that if you get divorced, getting a divorce, it'd probably be much easier to move on for a divorce than a death.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, again, it was just one of the things in the film that irked me a wee bit. I just felt like there was no kind of showing the process of him going from grieving to not grieving.
Yeah.
It should have shown that kind of awkward stage between him and his son where they were kind of learning to know each other a bit more, because that's not in there. If there is a lot of time that's passed, just say there's a year that's passed that I didn't notice, there should have been the moments where he's trying to get him ready for school and everything's going to shit. He's trying to make him breakfast and he puts the sugar on before the milk and the boy's like, no, I like the milk before the sugar, that sort mm-hmm. of stuff. There was none yeah. of that. So there was none of the relationship building between them, which going by the fact that he couldn't cook worth a fuck and the fact he's an architect and he's always busy, his relationship with his son would have been minimal at best. Mm. And all of a sudden he goes to, just looks like kind of dad of the year sort of thing very quickly. Yeah. I don't think it would work like that.
Totally agree.
Also used to, when I was first watching, I was like, he gets in for work and he just starts shouting, Jonah, I'm home. Has he been on his own? It wasn't until the babysitter showed up later, but that was in a later scene. It was like they went, fuck, we better put a babysitter in here, because it looks like he's the worst dad in the world.
Exactly.
It's bananas. Anyway,
I think there was a lot to pull apart on that, really, and just how kind of flawed it was. And I just didn't expect it to be shite for the standing that it holds among rom-coms.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's called that. It's kind of billed as a Nora Ephron comedy, or a Nora Ephron rom-com. It's like, well, Nora Ephron, if you're using her name, it must be, she must have a really good standard of films. If you look at her IMDb, there's a couple of good ones.
You've Got Mail.
Again, that's probably, I guarantee that's exactly the same. I've never watched that.
Tom Hanks, isn't it?
So is Meg Ryan. It's essentially a kind of unofficial sequel to Sleepless in Seattle, I think. It was like everybody loved it so much the first time around, they wanted to have these two back on screen together again. But You've Got Mail, again, it sounds like it's two people that don't know each other that have to get together. It's the same pish. But, fuck it. Right, you know our feelings on this film. We fucking loved it.
So next time J-Mac suggests a rom-com, I will pick it. Fucking hell, man.
A bad choice for a first deep dive, to the point where I'm genuinely considering just making this a sideshow episode and doing a proper deep dive on something that was actually good.
Well, the next deep dive can be a bit more interesting. What any memorable quotes?
For me it was when he's on the phone to the radio station and she's like, so how's your relationship with Jonah? He's like, Jonah and I, we'll be fine just as soon as I break his radio. I thought that was kind of cute, but again, nothing particularly memorable. What about you?
No.
And that has been this week's Deep Dive.
The memorable scene, obviously, is the one on the tower. That has to be, for just the whole sake of anytime you think of that movie, it's that. But even at that, it was quite lackluster. Boring.
Yeah, it was. It was painfully boring. It's almost criminally boring, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Walter, man. You were class. I felt bad for you.
Yeah.
And, well, if you ever need help, there's a fucking radio station that can help you out.
Yeah, exactly. It might get you back with Meg Ryan because she seems to be fucking loving the airways. Anything else you'd like to add on that, J-Mac?
Absolutely nothing at all. I think it was a terrible choice for the first deep dive after so long. So I'm glad we got it out of the way.
Yes. And our next deep dive poll will be available very soon for you guys to vote on our selections. And make sure you guys check us out at jibberjabberpodcast.com. You can find us on all the socials. This was a special deep dive episode. You'll get like one in every 4 weeks possible. But we are going to be doing this properly when the COVID time is right. Usually I'd say, you know, we've enjoyed bringing this to you, but I mean, I suppose I've enjoyed talking to you, J-Mac, about a movie that I really didn't enjoy.
That's just because of a charming personality.
Exactly. But make sure to let us know what you thought of that movie, and maybe let us know what you thought of the podcast, and just kind of keep on. And J-Mac actually put out a video recently begging y'all to go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube, and our YouTube subscriptions have gone up, so thanks very much for listening to J-Mac begging.
Aye, I mean, it's not something that I normally do outside the bedroom, so I felt a bit awkward with it, but it worked. We got a few more subscribers, but we can always use more, so please click on that subscribe button that's probably going to flash up, probably, I don't know, on my face, or you'll make it look like my cock popping up here, I don't know. But make sure you click on that subscribe button, and the content will get so much better once this COVID gets the fuck as well.
Absolutely. So thanks very much, guys. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive of such a great classic.
We hope you enjoyed it a lot more than we enjoyed watching that piece of shit.
And on that note, Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. Run! Go! Get to the jibber jabber!